Hi, Sierra. Come out the break into the face of the hill, the full spill of sun glare, hazes dust into air, arcades and down drift. A scattering of snap dragons points up, 7,000 feet, and cattle low in the field. Steam things amidst a morning veil, a cloud liquefying upon their backs. This broad-shouldered land, ridges that overtop a continent of birds, hot with noon sun or quickened by the sea breeze off a cold Pacific, returns its axis to the same degree, each day sky's processions a flight. I flew back in August. I saw the green cascade, earth a still wave, the snowmelt eking into rivulets that cut pylon stairs out of the granite spleen of the hills, heard the cowbells in the mountain air, the ground wearing the names of saints, Our Lady's slippers, virgins, gloves, James Wort, Peter's herb, all reaching for the same orbital curve. For Gary Snyder. I dedicated this poem to Gary Snyder, who lives in the same part of Northern California in which I grew up, partly because of my debt to Snyder and his poetics, the syllabics that I try and work with in that poem, but also because my poetry, like his, strives to live in the sometimes clarifying and sometimes vertiginous, but always breathtaking air of the mountainscape of California. I think you can especially feel the effect of that high elevation language in Snyder's Paiute Creek, especially in the first half. So I'll recite it. Paiute Creek. One granite ridge, a tree would be enough, or even a rock, a small creek, a bark shred in a pool. Hill beyond hill, folded and twisted, tough trees crammed in thin stone fractures, a huge moon on it all is too much. The mind wanders, a million summers, night air still and the rocks warm. Sky over endless mountains. All the junk that goes with being human drops away. Words and books, like a small creek off a high ledge, gone in the dry air. A clear, attentive mind has no meaning, but that which sees is truly seen. No one loves rock, yet here we are. Night chills, a flick in the moonlight slips into juniper shadow. Back there unseen, cold proud eyes of cougar or coyote watch me rise and go. I love this poem as well because it's one of quite a few poems, actually, that are written in some way in relation to Wordsworth's famous sonnet, "The World is Too Much With Us." And all of the poems that refer to this Wordsworth poem take some other slight variation on the world being too much or not enough with us. The Wordsworth poem goes like this. The world is too much with us. The world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. Little we see in nature that is ours. We have given our hearts away, a sordid boon. This sea that bares her bosom to the moon, the winds that will be howling at all hours, and are upgathered now like sleeping flowers. For this, for everything, we are out of tune. It moves us not. Great God! I'd rather be a pagan suckled in a creed outworn. So might I, standing on this pleasant lea, have glimpses that would make me less forlorn, have sight of Proteus rising from the sea, or hear old Triton blow his wreathed horn. So you can hear, I think, how Wordsworth contends against, as Snyder would say, the junk of human worldliness, which dissipates our attention. And Wordsworth longs to retune himself to the forces of nature, like the ancient pagan who saw Proteus in sea shimmer and heard the high blast of Triton's horn in strong sea winds. For Snyder, those god figures just become the parallel others of cougar or coyote. Another mid-century American response to that Wordsworth poem that I greatly love is Denise Levertov's O Taste and See. The world is not with us enough. O taste and see, the subway Bible poster said, meaning the Lord, meaning if anything all that lives to the imagination's tongue. Grief, mercy, language, tangerine, weather, to breathe them, bite, savor, chew, swallow, transform into our flesh, our deaths, crossing the street, plum, quince, living in the orchard and being hungry and plucking the fruit. Levertov speaks of returning to the pith of our lives, our lived experiences, here through the protean transformations of Christian devotional and liturgical images, which, according to another trope, that of the felix culpa, or fortunate fall, further reorients Eve's plucking of that so savory fruit as a clear affirmation of life. My poem makes use of devotional and natural imagery as one force among several that reach for higher elevations to the thin air of a high Sierra summit. Thank you for listening.